Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a great program for you, a very different program for you. Everything always comes back to money, and that's what finds topics onto this show that I hope you find interesting. And so today, we're going to take a different tack for folks out there that are, maybe they've been frustrated, you've been frustrated by the job market, or you work for a company, have a business, whatever you may do, employee or employer, whatever you do, whatever you're about, and you've wanted to bring an innovation or start a new company and bring that to the market, this show's for you. So we have a gentleman who's done that. His name is Bernd Schoner, and he is founder of Thing Magic LLC, a garage-grown RFID technology company. He's also an author and an entrepreneur. And the website, you want to take a look at, he's got a book out, which is pretty cool. We're going to be talking about that and also kind of sharing with you a little bit about his experience. But the website is www.berndburned.us. So berndburned.us. And Bernd is on the line. Bernd, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks. Glad to have you. Yes, thank you. So listen, well, first of all, let's just start at the front, and then we'll see what we can do to take advantage of your experience to help others out there who are thinking about doing the same. Of course, we'll introduce them to your book as well. Tell me a little bit about what you did. You started this company, and it was with a certain type of technology. Give us a little bit of the backstory.
Sure. Yeah, I came to America in 95, almost 19 years ago, to do my PhD at MIT in Cambridge, and at the end of those 5 years, myself and four of my lab mates from MIT were thinking about what to do with our future. We essentially were forced to leave academia because PhD is really a terminal degree, right? There's no hanging out
after that.
So unlike lots of tech founders who drop out of college to found a company, we sort of founded a company because we had to leave school. We decided to actually continue work on some of the technologies that we had pursued at MIT, and we were interested in staying in close touch with technology and science, and decided to found Thing Magic as essentially a services company providing technology and design services to typically large corporations. So we would do prototypes and smallish projects for others.
Interesting. So they would have a design or something they wanted to come up with that maybe they had a patent on, or they were developing it, and they would give that to you, and you would design prototype, work kinks out, I would imagine, and help them refine it. Is that what would happen?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes those companies were actually sponsoring research at MIT, but got frustrated when they couldn't really get a particular product or a particular technology over the line where it was generating money for them.
Okay.
Because MIT wouldn't really let them tell what they needed, so we were sort of bridging that gap going from something that was cool or that was demo, and then bringing it over the line to become a real product.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So I could see the niche that you kind of explored there, and then subsequent to that, you went on to you built up your company, I understand, and then you went on to sell it to a larger company, Trimble Navigation.
Yeah, that's correct. So I mean, in fact, that whole process took 10 years.
Wow.
So it was a rather lengthy startup story compared to many others that you'll hear or read about. After we used that initial business model for about 5 years, we found that there was a particular need in radio frequency identification technology, as you mentioned. And about halfway through in 2005, we started to transform transform the company from a services company into more of a product manufacturing company,
okay,
building these particular devices.
Interesting.
We had to, you know, take significant and significant investments to do that, and then that business model, yet another 5 years later, Trimble Navigation, a California-based technology company, got interested in and acquired it.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. Back at the time, you needed a lot of that capital. Was crowdfunding around back then?
No. Nope.
I didn't think it was. So you had to seek out funding and develop and expand and then be able to move this forward.
Yeah, so yeah, when we were seeking funding in about early 2005, you know, there used to be accelerators which are now popular again, but they sort of all died in the wake of the dot-com bust.
Sure.
In the early 2000s. So yeah, by the time we were looking for funding, there really, you know, wasn't much of the new and unconventional methods available. So we went for, you know, venture capital in the classic sense of the word.
Okay.
With all the you know, pluses and minuses that
sure,
cover that funding.
The book is The Tech Entrepreneurial Survival Guide, How to Bootstrap Your Startup, Lead Through Tough Times, and Cash In, which is the best part, cash in on success. Let's grab a quick break. We'll come back and we'll kind of start sharing with the listeners, those that are thinking of getting involved with something like this, some of the different things they need to be thinking about. Stay right there.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back. We're with Bern Schoner, and he is helping us understand a little bit about his path to success with his tech startup company, along with some other folks that were involved with that, and ultimately resulting in the sale to a large, very large multinational tech company. And now you still with the company? You work as their vice president of business development, Bern?
That's right. Yeah, okay. I continue to work for the acquirer.
All right, very good. So is that a common path that people that have done this like you, that they end up working for the company, or a lot of times people, they're finished, or is it maybe sometimes one way, sometimes the other?
It's very common. In fact, it's not entirely voluntary, and I don't speak for myself, but you know, many times when companies get bought, especially, you know, companies that sort of have valuable assets, but are not necessarily profitable.
Right.
The acquirer typically requires the team to stay on and make it profitable post-acquisition. So it's very common for tech companies to, for the team, especially the founders, to have to stay on for anywhere from a year to 3 years to really integrate with the new parent and make the whole business successful.
Yeah, because they want to get their money's worth, right?
That's right, and depending on how aggressive they are in their deal making, you know, a lot of the benefit for the team and the founders is tied to, you know, what's known as an earnout. So only if the business is successful going forward, they benefit significantly financially.
Well, and obviously the benefit of being able, you know, because you say, well, shoot, if I'm going to end up having to kind of get what I'm going to get by growing this business, why not I just stay independent and do it anyway? Becoming part of a much, much larger company like this can enable an entrepreneur to accelerate and leverage all of the resources of the larger company.
That's correct. And there's all kinds of scenarios. Obviously, in some cases, you know, the business can't survive alone, or there's not enough funding there to carry it forward. So, you know, without necessarily it being a fire sale, but, you know, that's the situation where you say, well, you know, we better, you know, get acquired, even if it takes a few years before we see the benefit of that. But then there's also the situations where you say, well, we have taken it so far, we have been reasonably successful, but really to get it to the next level, we need to integrate with a much bigger company who has the distribution channel or the resources or the general structure to make our offering successful.
Very good. Now, in your book, the Tech Entrepreneur Survival Guide, and that's available on Bern's website, the www.bernd.us, or available Amazon, places like that. In your book, Bern, you walk the tech entrepreneur or tech entrepreneur wannabe through the process of what's happening, kind of happens in the life and times or life cycle of a technology company, but also some of the things to watch out for, things to be careful of, and also maybe some strategies for different things that may happen. What would surprise my listeners, Bern, about what goes on in a company like yours when you were doing this before you guys became part of the larger company? What would be something we would be surprised to learn that you had to deal with, or you had to overcome, or maybe something that just would be, a surprise?
Surprise. I'm trying to put myself into the shoes of someone who hasn't done it and sort of is, going at this with a new perspective. I structured the book in three parts, right? I in the first part, I talk about the initial setup process, all the little things, sometimes some important, some not so important, of getting started. Maybe one, surprise for me was that I looked a lot at timing issues, when is a good time to become mm-hmm. a tech entrepreneur? And it turns out that contrary to urban myth, tech founders are actually not all college dropouts. They typically spend 15 years, on average 15 years, between their terminal degree and founding their tech company.
Wow.
And actually only 15% of all tech founders are under the age of 30. So the typical age bracket or the bell curve is really centered around sort of the 40-year-olds.
Okay.
If you're a little older or if you're mid-career, don't feel discouraged. There's really you have all the opportunity that the young guys have to become your own boss.
And maybe even a little bit of experience to go with it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting to look at the different startup assets that early career versus mid-career founders bring to the table. And it's very different, but there's very good reasons for either age group.
Sure.
To basically take the plunge.
Now, one of the things, and I know you had a team, there was you and you had this other group of people involved that really got your company going. And I imagine that, with the transition or evolution you went through from the service and development to then ultimately to some of the manufacturing, that there were a lot of different roles that needed to be filled. And I know that you go into this in your book, but let's just kind of go through it. You've got some of the basic roles. There are six core roles that you need. And I guess my first obvious question is, what if somebody, doesn't have that kind of team? Can you blend these roles together as long as they get covered? Is that the key part?
Yeah, my point is relative to these roles. Obviously, you typically have teams, at least founding teams, that are smaller than six people. In fact, I think keeping a group of six together is quite a challenge. We were five, and it was a challenge.
Okay.
But the point I want to make there is that those skills you have to cover one way or another. So if you're lucky, then you can get a lot done by the founding team. Because if that's the case, then you don't have to hire executives. You don't have to pay them as much. So having it on the founding team is really a good way to get started.
Okay.
And it's also an insurance policy for trouble later, because should you ever have to lay off people, the guys that you have on your founding team are there to stay. Right? They are motivated to make it successful, even if you hit a snag. So,
yeah,
so the point I'm making is that the more you can assemble on the founding team of those core skills, the better.
And you've got some real key folks that need to be involved. You refer to it in your book as the prima donna genius.
So one of the in some ways the prima donna should be in parentheses.
Yes,
not all geniuses are prima donna.
True,
many of them are. So you need to have yourself one technologist, one genius at least, to call yourself a tech company. Without
right.
that, it's very hard. But you don't need five, like we did.
And that's part of the challenge of keeping all five together.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And you need a leader. I mean, that's that kind of is part of the deal. I mean, you could, if you have 5-6 people and you try to do everything democratically or through a consensus building, I imagine that could be a challenge. So there needs to be an emergence of a leader.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. So consensus is great. When you can get it, it's great. But the problem is, in a startup, decisions have to be made even if there's no consensus.
Mm.
So the leader is the guy that the others look up to and say, okay, if in doubt, yeah, we follow him. That doesn't mean that he makes more money, that he gets more equity, or that he's even CEO. It just should be a trusted person that others look up to.
Interesting. Very good. If you're just joining us, Bernd Schoner's our guest, the Tech Entrepreneur Survival Guide, How to Bootstrap Your Startup, Lead Through Tough Times, and Cash In for Success. That's the book. And we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Bernd.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. www.bernd.us, bernd.us is the website. And we've got Bernd Schoner on the line talking to us about tech startup. And it's a fascinating area, especially for folks that maybe are either midlife or maybe right out of college, or maybe not even out of college, and they're thinking of doing their own startup. And we were talking about some of the different roles that are needed in the company. Talked about the genius, the leader, and then, of course, next up, Bernd, you would want to have, if possible, an industry veteran, somebody that knows their way around the block, so to speak.
That's right, yeah. Startups, you know, thrive on the notion that you're bringing a fresh perspective to an old problem or a new problem, and you're not too much influenced by how things were done in the past. On the other hand, once in a while, it's good to sit down and think about or talk to someone about how things are typically done in an industry, because you don't want to reinvent the wheel on everything. So that's where the industry veteran come in. You can provide that perspective.
And that kind of brings to the next role, which is really interesting, that sometimes maybe these young high-tech companies may forget, is at some point you've got to actually sell something, right, to be a viable company. You can't just be full of great ideas.
That's right, and technologies, they get excited about technology for the technology's sake, which is a great starting point, but not in itself a business model. So the sales animal is really the person that brings the perspective to the team that says, okay, if we build this, right, we're all excited about it, but if we build it, can we sell it, and how will we sell it?
Yeah,
and that's actually that very important element that technologists don't think about it all that much.
Well, and that brings me to a question that I wanted to ask, get in here, is do you have in your mind, Bernd, or seen this, or maybe if there's even a statistic out there, how many of these startups survive, number one? How many end up staying independent, or is really most of the time they end up cashing in and becoming part of another company? What do you have any general numbers for me, or kind of some way of divvying that up a little bit?
So in general, the numbers in terms of who becomes successful and who actually makes it to an exit, in general, the depending on which statistic you use, it's anywhere from 10 to 30%.
Okay.
Who either have basically long term have longevity or get to an exit.
Okay.
Among the people or the companies that do exit, certainly the IPO scenario is the rare occasion.
Right.
It's the one that the media writes about the
right,
most, so
right.
we learn about that all the time. But especially the kind of super successful IPOs like Facebook
sure.
or Twitter, that happens very, very, very rarely.
Yeah.
So the more common exit path for tech startups is the acquisition. So yeah, in part, my book was motivated by the notion that you know, there's all these companies out there that are mildly successful, you know, some are very successful. You know, finding the right time to exit and to monetize on the assets that you built up is a crucial skill, and many companies actually miss that point, are not, you know, a success or not considered a success.
That seems to me then. That getting big enough to get noticed is kind of like an Icarus effect. You got to get big and get high enough in the air, and to get noticed by perhaps one of these larger companies for a successful growth or exit pattern.
That's correct. And you know, the technology companies are fortunate in that you can actually monetize your business without being profitable, without being generating too much revenue, because large companies, other technology companies, or users see the strategic value of the technology.
Sure.
Right? So they put one and one together, and they say, okay, if we have this asset, then we can turn it into money through this other mechanism.
Right? Yeah,
that's
actually
a very rare thing in business acquisitions. Right.
True, because you're typically looking to acquire something that's going to, you know, have a revenue stream or profit. And but we've seen this in the news. Not, you know, it seems to, and I'm sure you watch it very closely, Bernd, but it's we see it where the company will make these acquisitions of these younger companies, and it gets folded in, and it gives them a huge strategic synergy that they can leverage.
That's correct. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And it's not an easy thing to do. You know, also lots of companies fail at it. I think the assumption is sort of, you know, half of all acquisitions fail. However, so that's another, you know, yet another piece in the book where I talk about, okay, what happens after this acquisition? How do we integrate or do we not integrate because we want to, you know, maintain an identity for this business? So there's various options, and it's very crucial to do that right. Otherwise, it can be a disaster for both the acquired company and the people, and for the acquirer.
Well, for somebody thinking of doing this, Bernd, they're ready. They've got the idea, they've got the concepts, they've got the whatever it is, they've got the passion to go with it. They can obviously get the book, The Tech Entrepreneur Survivor Guide would be a good start, and they need to, you know, of course, from a planner's perspective here, they need to have a business plan. They need to know what their exit is before they start. But so what would you say to them is really the thing to keep in their minds as they're going through this process, kind of to give them that nudge that they need as they're listening to this program?
Well, the first thing, you know, following up on what you said, is that, and I make that really clear in the book, an idea alone is not enough. Mm. You want to really think about what are you bringing to the table to make this thing successful? You know, and the idea is interesting, and it can help attract attention, it can help attract investors, it can help attract employees, but ultimately, I don't consider this a true startup asset. Right? For that, you have to look, you know, am I bringing IP to the table? Right? Do I inherit a patent from my university that I can bring to bear? And also, very important, you know, do we have know-how on the team? You know, that's the one startup asset where I'm saying you can't take that away. Right? That what your people know how to do, what the founding team knows how to do, that's your biggest and most important asset when you get started. So my advice for young entrepreneurs is be very honest with yourself and your team, and figure out what those assets are that you can leverage to make your company successful, and that you can apply to make your idea successful.
Excellent. Excellent stuff, Bernd. Bernd Schoner is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. The website, bernd.us, bernd.us. And the book, again, The Tech Entrepreneurial Survival Guide. And Bernd, it makes me wish I were more of a techie. It's very interesting stuff. I can read the science fiction, but I can't create it. But I really appreciate you coming on the program and talking with us today. And do check in with us again. We'll have you back.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.